Welcome to the Wrinkled Engineer Podcast. Tim returns as our overlord of pronunciation, and we get a twofer today. Why is engineering considered a commodity product? And Disney attractions that make us sick. Well, mostly me and not Tim. We're going to take a quick look at this proposed swimming pool between two buildings in London. Welcome to the Wrinkled Engineer Podcast. I'm Gates. Tim is back here with me.
How's it going?
It's been one of those weeks. I think I've got some fun stuff because I made a horrible mistake last night and I look like an idiot. So we'll talk about that because it's word related. We'll let you share as the overlord of pronunciation your word, and then I'm going to give you mine.
It's always bound to happen, though, isn't it? Anything that you criticize, you're bound to step in at some point, right?
Guilty.
All right. Well, I had one already, I guess, because this is something that's come up with me in meetings and things like that. You hear people use the word mute instead of moot in terms of, and usually in the context of point, like, well, that doesn't matter anymore. It's a mute point. And I'm like, Silence. Okay, I see where you got it from, that the point no longer has a voice or something like that. You know, it makes some level of sense, which I guess is what really propagates it. But, you know, it's M0OOT. So, yeah, moot.
That one's simple. And I can see that. Mm-hmm. All right. So mine happened last night. I was cutting together a short little video clip. And what makes this embarrassing to me is not only was it a mistake, but I tried to do my due diligence and make sure I didn't make the mistake. And it's anecdote versus antidote, which I totally know there's a difference between those two words. And
sorry,
I'm not the best spelling person in the world, but I'm an engineer and I think I'm not alone in that, present company excluded, I guess, with Tim. And so I Googled it. I got pulled up my search engine and I'm like, literary antidote, because I knew that word I knew how to spell to try and make sure my definitions and everything were correct. And the spelling was correct. And so it popped up and the definition was good. And then all those little suggested searches that give you expandable boxes to give you answers, All but one of those like 8 boxes had the wrong spelling, but it was related to literary or stories or not medicine or anti-venoms, right? So I'm like, I totally thought those words were spelled differently, but you know, it must be correct because it's on my search results.
So are you ready for this here? I just looked this up because I wanted to have the right definition. Malaprop or malapropism, a mistaken use of a word in place of a similar sounding word, often with unintentionally amusing effect. So a malapropism. Now, if you ever screw up in the future and you're like antidote malaprop, if you write that, then I guarantee you the right one's going to come up, because it's like, you know, all of these things that we talk about, that's what they really are.
That's a life hack I needed.
Yeah.
So luckily, it corrected itself rather quickly, and I hope the damage, the burn, was relatively minor, slow, and not very fast. I posted this 30-second little anecdote on YouTube, and of course, my thumbnail and heading were all wrong because I had blind faith in my search. And our friend Jim Hareka, who's come up like 3 times now in the last videos, was quick to be like, "I'm pretty sure you mean anecdote." And, you know, I had to laugh it off, but it was already late. I mean, this is what you get when you do things at like 10 o'clock at night. Right. And so by 11:30, I had managed to, I think, eradicate most of the mistake. But I was like, for those who like the IT crowd, everybody's got a blind spot and everybody got to see mine for a short period of time. So
and now it's gone. Alas.
Yes. Unless you're watching this video and it's resurfacing, but I will own up to it. I was an idiot and just be gentle and kind to those who say mute instead of moot.
Right.
So we had talked about a couple topics for our code-based discussion that we like to have. But I got a text from Greg today with a couple questions, but he sent me this like engineering listing for help. And it not like a job, but like a freelance type of gig economy, right? Somebody looking for an engineer to help them out. And I started reading it, and it was somebody who sounded like a residential building, but they had used, or a small shop. They said, I've already designed the building, calculated it. I've got plans that I can build, and I just need a letter from the county's asking for a registered engineer to write a letter and tell me basically what's being built and that it's okay.
Certifying the plans.
Yeah. Well, it was very specific that the plans and the calcs weren't necessarily being submitted and you didn't have to stamp or seal those. Just by writing it out in common language, you were explaining what was going to be built and that it was okay.
Were there going to be inspections?
I don't know. It was a very short posting, but it made me...
Sorry.
No, I was so... Greg and I are texting back and forth, kind of laughing about it. And the individual had posted calcs along, like, his calcs with it. So you could, you know, and he had said, if there's anything that needs to change, we can work that out. Let me know how much you think this is going to cost. And one of my big beefs with engineering, I mean, all MEP, structural, the whole multidiscipline team when it comes to building design, is that we've turned into commodity engineering. And the idea that an individual could post on a forum or whatever, I need help, who's probably looking to pay $300-$500 max for this, has said, hey, I can do all this work. I'm not licensed, so I can't stamp it. That's all I need you for. I just need a plan stamper to turn these in and make it go away.
Okay, so hold on a second. So let's say somebody like wants to write prescriptions for drugs or something like that. And they're like, I'm just going to post on a forum. I need a doctor willing to sign these scripts so I can start sending out drugs to people. You know, for some reason they would know on some level that that's pretty illegal, right?
Yeah.
Because there's life safety things involved. Well, guess what? You know,
yes.
It's no different. It's yeah, no it's different. And people need to look at them the same way.
I saw this drug commercial and I have all those symptoms.
Yeah.
Why does the doctor need to examine me, right?
Ready to go.
Yeah. And I think that's half the problem is that in general, people think, because a bean calc is relatively easy. I'm not saying people can't do the calcs. But that's
yeah,
just...
Yeah, even architects can do them. Yeah, that was for the architects out there.
Yeah, but you start getting into shear walls and diaphragms and connections and omegas and any other kind of, you know, amplification factors that throw you off. But the complement or the other half of this problem is that there's an engineer out there somewhere who's going, yeah, I'd like to make an extra $400. And all I have to do is say it's okay, and it's probably not going to fall down. Although I did look at the calcs, and it was not adequate. So why are we relegated to every engineer is the same? All you're doing is stamping the plans.
Don't understand what's being done. You know, we very much operate in a black box as far as they're concerned. What's happening here? What takes so long, right? Mind you, they don't want to know. God, you know.
It's a nasty process. It's ugly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it'd be great one of these days. You want to sit down beside me and watch what happens, you know? And they're like, please no.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, it comes down to just a generalized, and a lot of professionals deal with this, a respect of what goes into something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And sometimes the answers seem easy too. If they ask somebody with a lot of experience, what do you think about this? And we can just rattle off an answer. Well, why is that? It's because of everything that's led up to this moment.
Yes. All right? Of those college classes on materials and design and
mistakes and stories you've listened to and things you've seen and all this kinds of, you know, calculations on other things that you've done. Yeah, it all culminated with that question. And yes, I already happen to know the answer to it because of everything I've seen. Did that make it easy? No, there was a big process that led up to it. It just seemed easy because you were sitting here watching me spit it out.
Yeah, and part of assuming engineer of record responsibility for a project is that you understand all of this foundational informational material, all this foundation material from physics and math, right, even chemistry, that if I were to go take a differential equations class today, I wouldn't do very, very well. I mean, my kid's just finished his differential equations class, and yeah, I'm like, I did that. I got through it. And what it did for me was it proved that, you know, there's a relationship between shear, bending moment, and deflection diagrams that is simply integrating. I can't do that integration very easily now, but I know that proof exists, which gives me the confidence to know that they're related and it works. Even if it's not
simple. That's what I do to all the interns.
even if it's not simple loading, I have faith in that process because I have proved it in the past.
Right.
And so that's a foundation you can't just jump over and still have confidence in this system that is, you know, all these equations that are based on higher order math that have been simplified.
Right.
You know, or statistics. I would do horrible in a stats class now, but I remember doing t-tests and all the other deviation calcs that proved, oh, this is how we get to reliability matrices, and luckily, I don't have to do that anymore. So is there any path forward? I mean, obviously, we can't mass educate
the
populace.
I was going to say, it also reminds me, I was in a meeting with an architect once, someone who, you know, was a principal who'd been practicing for at least 20 years at that point. And he said, as far as structural engineering is concerned, don't the computers basically just do everything for you now? And I thought about it for a second, and I'm like, yeah, in so much as buying a calculator makes you a mathematician, you know, it's
depends
just
if it's a
tool.
TI-89 or not?
Yeah, I can't hand a hammer to a guy and make him a carpenter. You know, it doesn't work that way. It's just a tool. You know.
And now I'm embarrassed for using a TI reference because we both know I'm an HP guy.
Lord. Reverse Polish nonsense.
That's awesome.
And by the way, I hope I offend our Polish listeners.
So, you know, to the software point, one of the things that kind of made me chuckle about this person's attempt to design a concrete slab is they had pulled it into one of the Bentley software, and I don't remember which, if it was systems or whatnot, but it was one that he could model the concrete floor.
Yeah.
And it had 2,500 nodes, and having worked with Risa, that's a lot of nodes, even for a plate. And his output was 1,300 pages long.
And must I be get, right.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was thinking, that's a good way to, you overwhelm the plan reviewer so that they can't refute that it's not in there, because they're not going to look through it.
Yeah.
But I've had some lengthy calc packages. I've sent calc packages that are 2,000 or 3,000 pages long for three-story buildings that are not normal by any stretch of the imagination, and, you know, only had 1,000 pages of computer output. So I feel like, I think you did something wrong for a small square building and for one element to produce this much garbage. And you can't just start punching things in the software and expect it to be remotely, not only correct from a forces and physical point of view, but what about all of the prescriptive code limits and requirements that are out there, that, like, he had rebar at 24 inches on center in concrete. You can't do that with reinforced concrete. Doesn't work. Not per ACI. I think every profession, right? There's a reason there are steps to becoming a professional, whether you're an accountant or an actuary or an attorney, that protect the public either from harm, whether it's physical or financial or
and
liability.
We try to create as many processes as possible, and the mistake in that is thinking that everything is covered by the processes, because the entire concept of professions, and this is for all of them, is that it's that last 3 to 5% that isn't covered by the processes, is that's where you really make your paycheck.
Yeah And so it gets frustrating, and I know lots of engineers who are frustrated by what appears to be anybody can do it. And there are lots
because
of
it's simple input, simple output, complicated process in between.
Yep. Yeah. And lots of responsibility and knowing the right questions and the right pitfalls. And even from client to client, where you're in different industries or different, whether it's retail or movie theaters, themed environments, hotels, they all have some very specific requirements mm-hmm. that if you're not aware of, you can make life really bad for the owner. So I asked him the other day, I said, what Disney attractions do you get sick on or will you not ride? And I was surprised that, I mean, not necessarily surprised, but you know, I've got a couple, but he only has like one. And I'm like, well, that's not fair. So what's your
Disney
ride?
Disney, I could go all day and, you know, hit all the worst rides and be fine. Mission Space, I have to be careful on. that one's pretty bad. So, they always say, look straight ahead. Yeah. Do not move your head at all. Do not look to the sides. You'll be sorry.
So Mission Space is my top. I don't want to go on it. Although I will go on the green side, which doesn't spin. Yeah, I'm fine with the motion other than the spinning. And what's weird about my relationship with Mission Space, I went on it in 04 on my honeymoon. Both my wife and I, no problems. It wasn't even a big deal. We went back in 2016-ish, 2015-ish with my two boys that were, you know, like almost 12 and 9 or something like that. And I was so concerned about them on that attraction. Because, you know, you're supposed to push buttons and things. And I was worried they would get sick. So I constantly was like making sure
turning
they were okay.
Turning your head.
Yes.
You were turning your head.
And I was like, oh, that was like, this was horrible. This was not a fun experience. And so I walked off just fine. It wasn't. I mean, I was like, that wasn't pleasant, but I thought, well, maybe it's because I was turning my head. And then in 2018, I moved out here and my parents were here and I took them and I went on the attraction with them. And so I'm like, I'm prepping them like this is a pretty extreme ride as far as the motion goes. So I wasn't even pushing buttons. I'm like, I'm just going to look straight ahead. And I about threw up when I got off the ride. Like every time I rode it, it got worse. And I'm like, okay, we're done. We're done with this ride.
Yeah.
And my dad loved it. He thought it was the best ride. He's like, I don't know why. And then
maybe it's because he didn't know how it worked. Maybe it's the knowledge of how it works.
Spins really, really fast.
Yeah.
Lean back and spin. Yeah. It's
giant centrifuge.
So it's weird. It always seems like the attractions that make me sick are just 10 seconds longer than my threshold.
Oh.
And so on Mission Space, I can handle my own blood, but if there's blood coming out and like in real life, I can handle blood. But if there's realistic blood in movies, I don't do well. I get squeamish.
Interesting.
My brain runs through worst case scenarios and just the heartbeat sound in Mission Space is enough to make me start to psychologically lose it.
Really?
And so that's like
the hibernation portion gets to
yes.
you?
So that's like pushing me towards the edge of the cliff. And then at the end of that attraction, the ship stops on the edge of the cliff. And like if the ride ended there, I would have been fine. But that extra fall
and
is like pushing
forward.
Me. Yeah, it's like pushing me over the cliff. And I'm like, this is. And in Avatar and Pandora, the flight ride. It's the same thing. It's like, it's just a little bit too long. I've built up a tolerance to it, but there's still a couple times where I'm like, I just got to close my eyes and it's getting too much.
Okay.
But those are really the only two that it's been a while since I've been on teacups. But as Tim was telling me earlier, it's like, you can make yourself sick on teacups. And I got sick once.
Yeah. Cannot and just like kind of leave the wheel pretty much alone and just cruise.
I had a nephew with me and he just wanted to go as fast as possible. So I was cranking and cranking and cranking. Yeah. I was getting tired and I went from over the center to just like splay back.
Up straight, yeah.
And that spiral motion of going from really tight to just whoomp, whoomp, whoomp. I was leaning against a railing when I got off of that ride. I was like, which surprises me. Like Everest I can ride, but the backwards isn't my favorite, so I'll ride it once. And also a hot summer day in Florida when you're going inside the air conditioner and then outside and then inside that temperature flux. Maybe I'm diabetic, I don't know. But that temperature flux is not pleasant. And then, see, my list is way longer than yours. I don't even know why I thought I was in the same ballpark.
And it's apparently getting longer.
The last one is the Temple of Peril, Indiana Jones ride in Paris.
Yeah, which is awful.
I went in 2004.
Yeah.
And the thing ran backwards. And I rode it. You know, I'm here in France. I got to ride the ride. For 2 years, it ran backwards, and I happened to go to the park when whatever person decided that was a great idea to turn
so if you haven't been on
the car
it,
around.
It's nothing like the California one.
Yeah, I'll show
it
a picture
is,
of it.
It's a little,
I took while
okay,
I was there.
It's a little mine ride that's practically a carnival ride. It has a loop, which is a joke because it's like my washing machine is almost bigger.
Yeah, it's like a 10-foot diameter.
Yeah. So it's extremely rough because it's poorly engineered. It's not to say that it's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
But a well
that's a bolt together ride.
A well-engineered roller coaster is also smooth. I have learned by talking to ride engineers. So
it is no California Screaming.
Right, which is the opposite. Maybe
the Rolls-Royce of the coasters.
The smoothest of all full-scale roller coasters ever constructed. Exactly.
The thing I love about the Paris ride is, though, in order to turn the cars backwards, all of the signage and theming had to be switched to face the other direction because you didn't want to stare at blank rock work and stuff. So I would love to try that one front-facing just to, you know, have the true experience. But that's my list of, and maybe just
it's
as
still,
I'm getting older.
It's still not good. It's still terrible. They you know why they turned it around backwards? To try to make a terrible ride good. I had some friends move to California from Paris, and the only Indiana Jones or the only Disney park they had ever been to was Disneyland Paris. They were annual pass holders there. They were well acquainted with it. And I told them I was excited about taking them on Indiana Jones here. They're like, no, thank you. And I'm like, no, 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 it's completely different. Yeah. They're like, it can't be different enough. I'm like, trust me.
Totally different ride platform.
Not even
not a
close.
Roller coaster. Yeah.
Shares a name.
Yes,
that's
yeah.
pretty much the end of it.
The intellectual property is the only tie between those two elements.
Right.
And when
they
I
really
when I went
to tear that ride down,
when I went to France for my 7 or 10 days, I became an annual pass holder because it was so much cheaper
to do that than to just buy a multi-day ticket. That's funny.
Yeah, it was like $150. I'm like, sold. This is putting my annual pass at Disneyland to shame. So,
yeah,
and that was great because for the next year I got all this French literature that they would send to APs.
And I imagine after your third day, you were thinking, I've spent too much time here.
You know, I do get bad looks when I say I went to France for like 9 days, three of which I spent in the park.
Yeah.
But I
One's
saw all
okay.
the big sites. Yeah, I saw all the big sites. Well, and Studios was open, so I did both of those. That was my first time on Rock and Roller Coaster. So.
Oh, weird.
Yes, because I went to Paris before I went to Orlando. Yeah.
Which they've changed in Paris now, I believe.
Yes, it's now Guardians.
Yeah.
So, I think it's Guardians. It's one of those Marvel things.
Because California switched their tower to Guardians also.
Yes.
Now, now you've got two unique attractions at Walt Disney World. Which is not a bad thing, you know?
No,
I like having different things in different places.
Yes, awesome. Well, I feel now shamed about being so weak in the stomach, but oh well, I'll take it.
Nonsense, everyone's different.
So you texted me a picture or an article to a pretty extreme engineered structure that we both kind of I don't think we rolled our eyes. We just were like, the practicality of this was questionable.
It made the news cycle, so probably a lot of people saw it. But two buildings with a Lucite, you know, acrylic, whatever, swimming pool spanning between the two, which just basically makes it shaped like this between two buildings.
Which doesn't seem too bad until you look at the picture and you're like, oh, that's not small.
Right. Yeah, it was a good span. And they even described a little bit of the dimensions behind it and things. And, you know, I have no doubt that it's strong enough to do what it's going to do and all that kind of thing. That's not a concern at all. I was mainly thinking about, what if I had been asked this question? You know, the funny thing is everybody's going to be focused on the pool itself as a structural element in terms of like, wow, that's so cool that they got it to go that far and to do that. They're going to think that that's the amazing part.
I mean, water weighs a lot, right? Like, water's heavy.
It does, but oh my God, is it predictable? So, yes. And it can't get fuller anywhere because it's got sides of finite height and water will simply slosh over the edge. So it's actually more predictable to load on that bridge than just about any bridge we end up designing.
And if you jump in it, that amount of water gets displaced, so you add in the weight.
Yeah. Adds nothing. So where's the magic then? And the way I look at it is it's in the end releases. How do you allow the buildings to lead their independent lives of moving in every way that they want to move, and span them with a pool?
Yeah, without using the acrylic as a jackhammer from one building to the other.
Right. So I was thinking about like how I would design all the, you know, proper end releases between the structural members. And basically how all the architectural finishes surrounding the edge of the pool would work such that things could move, but also no gaps opened up, you know? Mm-hmm. You have to allow the buildings to move like this and to move like this and to move like this and do
settlements
everything
that, and all that.
Yeah. And buildings, they grow and, you know, they do this kind of thing when the sun shines on them. And like, you don't realize everybody else thinks of buildings as static, except for structural engineers who think of them as like moving machines,
especially those that work in seismic country.
Right. Particularly. Yeah. If you want to really work on end releases, get a seismic engineer. They always are the best at those. But yeah, that would be the fun of the whole thing would be the end releases on how you would handle that in terms of building it properly and keeping the pool level and, you know, doing everything that a pool wants to do.
Yeah. I mean, renderings always paint the pretty picture and make you, you know, takes your breath away. I always worry about maintenance. who's the guy who's going to scrub the bottom side of the tank that's on the outside and what happens after crud starts to form, and, you know, this building starts to go down a quarter inch and it's now not as level as it could be.
Yeah, that was one of the things I put was that, you know, a geotechnical engineer listening to this, he would say, you know, the subsidence isn't going to be equal between the two buildings. You know, the buildings are going to settle differentially, differently than one another.
Yeah.
So got to account for all these things when you design this.
Yeah, it's fun to see these unique applications and.
Yeah.
You know, again, we're underpaid, aren't we? We're underappreciated as engineers.
Well, if you pull it off, if they pull off this design, let's say that they do it poorly, it'll probably work. They'll just have a lot of maintenance problems over the years. If you do it well, you'll basically get rid of the maintenance problems and everything will just function fantastically. And that's, you know, something that would be nice as an owner.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, hopefully the value added is life cycle cost, ease of construction, all those things that give value to an owner that makes them go, ah, that's why I hired you. You got to impress them from that standpoint. Unfortunately, we often see projects where it's not life cycle cost that is the driver. It is initial cost that is the driver. And, you know, we deal with it as best we can. Well, that was a fun one. I kind of enjoyed today's other than me looking like an idiot or admitting to being an idiot.
Aw. We'll get through it.
Yeah, I'll survive. We'll I think survive. My ego can absorb a little bit of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, awesome. Have a good evening, Tim. It's still daylight Thank where you. You are. It's
Yes, it is. You can see out by my windows. Yes, it is.
I always I'm looking out mine. It's dark. The
yep.
The Eastern time zone is not my favorite.
Well, at least you're south, so.
This is true. This is true. So, awesome. I'm the Wrinkled Engineer. This is Tim. Thanks for joining us. Have a good one.